Right. So a good evening to everyone once again, and a Shavua Tov to everyone. Baruch Hashem, I thank you all for your comments from last week and for your questions, which really sharpened a lot of what we spoke about, and also, in a way, prepared the way for this evening. I thank Web Yeshiva, which is the host of this evening, and of course thank Ezra for all his help, as his name is. He is Ozer Bilti Ragil, to make sure that everything works. So this evening, what I'd like to speak about is, I would say, the crux or the climax of the Gabbai's job. The Gabbai is obviously in charge of davening in general, but there's no question that the Gabbai's main job comes to fore as someone that stands there and basically leads Kriyas HaTorah. There is a Baal Korah, of course. On the other side of it, there's, of course, someone that gets an Aliyah. But the Gabbai decides in many, many different ways who's the Baal Korah, who gets the Aliyah, what to say in between Aliyahs. And from this perspective, I would say that of all the jobs of a Gabbai, this is where the Gabbai really shines. This is where I would even say either compliments or complaints come about. And therefore, I thought this evening we're going to deal with primarily Kriyas HaTorah. The first thing I'd like to deal with, which I'm about to share with you, is what usually happens when you only have a minimal amount of aliyahs, and therefore you can't give aliyahs to all the people that you believe should get aliyahs that day. Excuse me. If there's people that have simchas or lo aleinu yortzeits, who goes first, who goes second? These are questions that come up quite often. Now, I'll be honest with you, as I said last week, but I'm going to reiterate it in this particular context, there are many different minhagim out there for who gets the right of way for aliyahs. And therefore, the first and foremost thing that I said last week, and I repeat this week, is Baruch Hashem, if you have a local rabbi, he should paskin on these issues. He's the one that decides, because a lot of it is not based on halacha, it's based on minhagim. Though what I'm about to present is more halacha than minhagim, there are parts of it that, if I can just share a story, I don't remember if it's the Noda B'Yehuda, the Shagas Aryeh, one of the two, came to shul and they said, we have, I don't know, a yortzeit and a bar mitzvah, whatever it might be, who should get the aliyah? And he said, flip a coin. So they looked at him and they said, do respect, Rabbi, these are halachas in Shulchan Aruch, in Magen Avraham, in the Taz. To which the Noda B'Yehuda, the Shagas Aryeh, I forgot who said it, said, how do you think they got to it? Namely, not everything that we do in shul is based on halacha, it's based on minhagim or various practices in the shul, and therefore the first thing is, of course, on everything, but definitely on this issue, to consult with your local rabbi. Number two, I did compile a list of what I believe are the right of way in terms of aliyahs, but I'll be honest, you can probably look online this evening at different lists and you'll see maybe this is before that or that's before this. And therefore, it's not Torah Misinai, but I think it's a working list to at least base yourself on when these clashes happen. Namely, there's a famous story of the Satmar Rebbe. I don't know how many of us are connected to Satmar Hasidim just because of our orientation and their orientation. But this story goes that the Satmar Rebbe was in shul, and they said, we have only one aliyah, shlishi, on a Monday or a Thursday, and there's both a chassan and a bar mitzvah boy. Who should get the aliyah? To which the Satmar Rebbe said, check who's older. Because as you know, in Satmar, they all get married very, very young. So, without further ado, let me begin to talk about this. As you can see here, I divided it between weekday and Shabbos, and I sent this out via email prior to the class. Whoever would like it afterwards, please contact me, and I'll send it to you, obviously, in word, so you can change it based on whatever the minhagim are in your shul. So, let's begin. On a weekday, the first person that gets an aliyah is a chatan on the day of his wedding. Namely, if it's a Sunday like today, and the wedding is before Shkia, he would get the aliyah of Shlishi, if there's no one else to get the aliyah. However, If the wedding is after Shkia, like now in the winter when Shkia is very, very early, then Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, don't give him the Leah. He doesn't get the right of way because he's not a chassan as of yet. By the way, that would have ramifications on skipping Avarachamim on the Afruf Shabbos prior because he's not a chassan yet either. And the Maharsham says no. Even on the day before his wedding after Shkia, he would get the Aliyah. What I believe it's based on is a very simple thing. There's an ancient custom of Ashkenazim, I don't believe Sephardim have this custom, to fast on the day of your wedding. So, if you fast on the day of your wedding, say today, and your wedding is at 6 o'clock in the evening when it's already dark at 5, do you break your fast prior to your chuppah or not? There are two minhagim. So the minhag that says you don't break your fast assumes that you're basically a chassan from the morning, and it continues until your chuppah. It doesn't continue until dark. And the minhag that says break your fast means there's a minhag to fast the day before your wedding. You're not a chassan yet, formally. So without getting into all the lamdas, this is the machlokes on the day of the wedding for sure. It's part of the mitzvah simcha of the chassan, that he's misameach others. Thus, there's a custom that he speaks Torah at the chassan's tish. And part of that is he gets an aliyah, which is a means of teaching Torah to the public, to have a public Torah reading where everyone's learning Torah via the chassan that gets that aliyah. So that's the first person. The second one is a bar mitzvah boy on the day of his 13th birthday. Again, on the day of his 13th birthday, if it's when he celebrates his bar mitzvah, a day later, a day, whatever it might be, then of course, not necessarily does he get that aliyah. Number three, and this is interesting for everyone, excuse me, is a yortzeit of a father or a mother. I always thought, and I saw many shuls that seemed to put the yortzeit first. Maybe the reason is that many of the shuls, as you probably know as gabayim, are fueled, quote-unquote, by yortzeits. Namely, people that come to shul for yortzeit are what keeps the minyan together all year. The old ancient joke that there's 8 old people in shul and they're waiting for 2 young people with a yortzeit that come and fill up the minyan. So, obviously, if that's being the case, I always thought yortzeit goes first. But it turns out that, no, it comes after the chassan, and after the bar mitzvah boy. So going back to the Satmar Rebbe, he wasn't exactly right with that good joke. Namely, the chassan comes first, and then the bar mitzvah boy, and then the yortzeit. Number four, a father on the day of the bris. And number five is a sandik on the day of the bris. So that's during a weekday. But a weekday, I have to admit, is less problematic than a Shabbos. Now, Shabbos should be less problematic for a very simple reason. We can add aliyahs on Shabbos. Everyone agrees you can add aliyahs on Shabbos. So there shouldn't be a problem. Everyone that should get an aliyah should be able to get an aliyah. However, first of all, there are shuls that don't add aliyahs on Shabbos. For Tircha de Tzibura, they don't want to elongate davening, so therefore they don't add aliyahs. So that's number one. Number two, and not less important, there are, of course, not just Shabbos, there's Yontif. Yontif, there's a very strong custom, though the Ramah allows to add aliyahs, and that's what we do on Simchas Torah. There's a strong custom not to add aliyahs on Yontif or on Yom Kippur, because, as Rav Soloveitchik explained, the days of aliyahs is corresponding to the Chumrah of the day. Shabbos is the most Chamor. The violation of Shabbos has the most severe punishment. So that has 7 aliyahs or more. Yom Kippur has karet, a little less than Shabbos, so it has 6 aliyahs. Yontif is only a lav, like eating pig, so it has 5 aliyahs. Chol HaMoed has a little kedusha, but it's not like Yontif, it has 4 aliyahs. And so does Rosh Chodesh, because it has a korban musaf. And all the rest have 3. So to leave that in place, many people don't add aliyahs on Yontif. So this list would be very important if all you have is 5 aliyahs on a weekday Yontif. So, those that don't add aliyahs on Shabbos or on a Yontif, this is the Seder. This is the right of way, the way I've put it together. But again, there could be a little difference in each and every shul. Number one, a chassan on the Shabbos prior to his wedding or a bar mitzvah boy on that day. So Baruch Hashem, unlike a weekday, you don't have to choose. You have seven aliyahs. The first two, let's say Shlishi Revi or Shlishi Shishi, whatever it is, should be the bar mitzvah boy and the chassan. Those are the two that get it. The chassan on the Shabbos prior to his wedding in Ashkenazi communities, and the bar mitzvah boy on the day of his bar mitzvah. Number two, a husband of a woman that just gave birth on the first Shabbos she came to shul after giving birth. So again, I don't know the minhagim in all your shuls, but at least in the shuls in Israel that I frequented, a woman who finally comes to shul after a birth says HaGomel the first Shabbos that she's in shul. Namely, she's a bit recuperated enough from the birth that she says HaGomel. Should she say HaGomel so quickly or not? Machlokes HaPoskim. But when she comes to shul, that first Shabbos, the husband should get an aliyah, and if she says HaGomel, she gets HaGomel. Number three, a chassan on the Shabbos, after his wedding, namely during Shever Brachas. During Shever Brachas, ultimately, he is a chassan for sure, and I added, if the wedding was from the prior Wednesday and onwards, then he would also get an aliyah. Yortzeit on the day of a father and mother would come number four on the list. Number five is a father of a baby boy on the Shabbos of the Bris. Namely, the Shabbos of the Bris, where ultimately he basically is having the Bris that day. Not the Shabbos prior to the Bris, the Shabbos of the Bris. He would come before someone who's had a Shalom Zachar the night before, but the Bris is on Sunday or Monday or sometime during the week. He's number six on the list. Number seven is a chatan on the Shabbat of Shever Brachas if the wedding was from Wednesday onwards the week prior. So what we said earlier was if the wedding was on Wednesday and onwards, this is a little different. Number eight is a bar mitzvah boy that became 13 that week, not that day. Number nine is a yortzeit that will happen that day for a parent. So ultimately, it's not someone that's a father or mother yortzeit, but rather it's someone who has on Sunday would be, let's say, a yortzeit on Sunday or Monday that week. The minhag Ashkenaz is that the Shabbos before the yortzeit, as many of you know, the person who's about to have a yortzeit davens Friday night, davens Shabbos morning, and ultimately, or Shabbos Musaf, and then Motzei Shabbos says Myriv and says Kaddish at those times, even though it's not his yortzeit. So it has significance in some way or another, and therefore he gets an aliyah. Number 10 is a father of a baby girl who will be named that Shabbos. Number 11 is someone who just finished Shiva, if the seventh day is Shabbos, but at Mincha. Because at Shachris, he's still considered an Avel. The seventh day, as you know, you sit for just the morning. At Mincha, he gets the Aliyah. Number 12 is someone who has to say HaGomel. The reason I say it's custom is because you could say HaGomel without an Aliyah. There's no reason to get an Aliyah because of HaGomel. Why do we connect an Aliyah to HaGomel? For a very simple reason. HaGomel, according to some, is in place of the Korban Todah that a person should have brought in certain situations. Arba Tzrichim Lehodot. Four people have to thank God for miracles that happened. And therefore, today we don't have a Korban Todah, so the Bima is in place of a Mizbeach, and the Aliyah is sort of in place of that Korban. And therefore, you should say a Gomel at the Bima. But again, I say that's only custom because he could say a Gomel even after davening. He could say a Gomel in the middle of the week too. There's no reason for waiting for laning, but if possible, it's nice to connect the two. I would just add that you should consult your rabbi how long after something extraordinary happened can you say HaGomel. There's different shitot in the poskim. It's not forever. And therefore, if it's already 2, 3, 4, or 5 weeks later, you should consult your rabbi if he should say HaGomel or not, because it may be a bracha levatala. I'll just finish the list and then I want to get to Shlomo Meir's question. Father of a baby girl will be named at Shabbos. Next is someone, I mentioned this already, and finally, a moel, a sandik, or a guest. It's interesting, I've never seen a shul that gives an aliyah to a guest per se. Today I think it's even the opposite, that the people in the shul, there's cards when they got aliyahs last, so no one feels, God forbid, offended. When it comes to guests, rare, but you should know it's written in Poskim that a guest should feel welcome, and one of the ways you make him feel welcome is giving him an aliyah. So he goes together with the moel and the sandik. On Rosh Hashanah, maybe even Yom Kippur, there's a custom to give those that are the ones that are shlichei tzibur, the shofar blower, as long as they're not paid for their services. So that's the list, and I'd love to now, after going through the list, say two things. Number one, I can send this list to anyone that would like. And number two, I'd love to hear, just to connect to your questions. So because I had the list on, I didn't see the chat. Let me see what was said, and we'll connect to it. Number one, regarding a gomel. Yes. So regarding a gomel, I'll be honest with you. There's mi hakatzeh el hakatzeh, do you need to say a gomel? Everyone agrees after a serious operation, everyone agrees after an extraordinary, God forbid, I would say, accident that you got out of, everyone agrees to that. The big disagreement is when you go from town to town, planes, ships, etc. Once upon a, the machlokas comes down to the following issue. Once upon a time, it was very dangerous to go from town to town, or if it wasn't dangerous from town to town, it was very dangerous to go from country to country. And therefore, Hagomel was warranted. So today, when plane travel may even be safer than car travel in certain places, you all know the jokes about Israeli drivers. The question is, do you still have to say Hagomel? Rav Moshe Feinstein said, yes, the halacha didn't change. Holchei Midbarot is one of the four people that need to bring a Korban Todah. And therefore, if you go over a desert, from our perspective, you go in a plane from a country to a country, you need to say Hagomel. Rav Soloveitchik felt it's all based on the amount of danger. And since there's less danger today, both from city to city, from country to country, and definitely plane travel, he said not to say it. So therefore, you understand that there's going to be a difference of opinion in terms of the people in your shul. Some will go with Rav Moshe Feinstein. I went from country to country. According to some, take it a step further, from town to town, I need to say a gomel. And others will say, like Rav Soloveitchik, it's only when things are dangerous. My personal custom is only to say it when there's an extraordinary danger of some sort. I admit that I don't say Hagomel after traveling on a plane. I travel quite often. I don't really feel a sakana. However, the first time I traveled during COVID or after COVID, when COVID was still strong, and I got back to Israel, and Baruch Hashem, I did not get COVID on the way, I did feel that was a little bit more warranted to say Hagomel. So it really depends on where you are and what poskim they go by to see if you say Hagomel or not. Okay, so that's with regard to what I call the right of way when it comes to aliyahs. So without further ado, let us continue now, and we'll go to the next issue, and that is, of course, the issue of a mistake in the Sefer Torah. Excuse me. Before we begin with mistakes in the Sefer Torah, I want to give two words of introduction about this issue. Number one. One second. There's a question before we get there. Okay, so I'm going to read Larry's question. Okay. Larry's question was, if during the week you have, say, three yortzeits in shul, and there's a kohen, can you ask the kohen either to leave the shul, or you say, bereshuta kohen, with permission from the kohen, we're not calling him up. So, Alpi the Gemara in Gittin that talks about the Kohen getting the first Aliyah, it only applies on Shabbos. During the week, it doesn't apply. So therefore, you don't even have to say Bereshit HaKohanim. You can go ahead and give everyone who has a Yortzeit an Aliyah. That's Alpi Dina the Gemara. However, some disagree and say that the whole reason for giving the Kohen the first Aliyah was that people shouldn't fight. And therefore, in our shuls, they fight during the week too. And from that perspective, you should go ahead and even during the week, makpid that the Kohen gets the first Aliyah. I'll be honest with you, I really truly think that it's based on something else. The Gemara says the Kohen gets the first Aliyah because it's a kiyum of vikidashto. Namely, you sanctify the Kohen by giving him the first Aliyah. One of the ways we show that a Kohen's an important person in Judaism is he gets the first Aliyah, he benches for all of us in a Zimun, etc. If it's a Din d'oraisa, the way I just presented it, then it makes no difference if he gives permission or not. You'd probably have to give him the first Aliyah. If, on the other hand, it's all a Din d'rabbanan, then I think it's based on will they fight, won't they fight, will the Kohen get upset or not, and the idea of saying Bereshut HaKohanim might be a very, very good idea. Or asking him to leave, and then you call up someone, he says Baruch Hu, he comes back in, quote unquote, it's too late. Whatever the tricks are, that's what you should do in that situation. I believe it's really dependent on what your rabbi paskins. I could see it both ways. I really don't have a preference one way or another. I will say that since my Rabbeim came from Afsalavechik, and he was very machbid on this, when I had a Yortzeit once, and I was in shul, and there were two Yortzeits, and the Gabbai wanted to ask the Kohen to leave, I asked him not to and give the other person the Aliyah. I was davening, I felt that was good enough. But I could see it both ways in this regard. Okay, I just want to see if there's another one. No. Okay. So let's get to mistakes in Sefer Torah. I'm going to say two things about mistakes in Sefer Torah. Number one, when are mistakes found in the Sefer Torah? So, not so many years ago, I learned a lot about mistakes in Sefer Torah from a sofer here in Efrat. His name is Rabbi Rafi Kadosh. Wonderful man, did his doctorate on the Satmar Rebbe, of all things. And he told me that mistakes in the Sefer Torah happen because of two opposite reasons. On the one side of the spectrum, Sifrei Torah become pusul when people don't use the Torah. The ink in the Torah needs air. So the more you roll the Torah, the more you use it, the less mistakes there are going to be. But if you donate a Torah to a shul, and it sits in the Aron and no one ever uses it except for the odd Simchas Torah, then the probability of founding mistakes is much higher. That's reason number one, on the left side. Now let's go to the right side. Reason number two. I'm going to say it in his language in Hebrew. Whoever understands will laugh. Whoever doesn't understand, I'll explain it in English. He said, reason number two, mi ba'alei kore mitlahavim. In English, from a laner, that's an excited laner. When you're an excited laner, what inevitably happens? You unfortunately spit a lot of saliva. And therefore, the wetness of the saliva, unfortunately, will passel some of the letters in the Torah. So therefore, my suggestion is, obviously, first and foremost, to use the Sifrei Torah in shul. And number two, to tell your Balei Koreh, obviously get excited, it's laning, you should excite the people, but be very careful, because if you spit a lot, it could passel the Torah for the next Kriyas HaTorah. That's the first introduction. The second introduction is that before we get to the issue of mistakes in the Torah, we should talk about mistakes where the Torah is perfect, but the Balei Koreh are not. Namely, the Torah, Judaism is perfect, the Jews are not. The Balei Koreh makes a mistake. When do you correct him, and when don't you? So if you're in a Sephardic shul, following the Shulchan Aruch, they're much more machmir on this issue. Even if you have a mistake in the punctuation or whatnot, they're machmir. Ashkenazim, following the Ramah, have the following ironclad rule. If your mistake changes the significance of the word, you have to correct the Baal Korah publicly. If it doesn't change the significance of the word, then you don't correct them publicly. But after davening, I like to say 2 days, 3 days later, you call him up and you ask him nicely to please prepare better for his next Kriyas HaTorah. So that's the ironclad rule of the Ashkenazim. Now, how does this play out? A, since most of our Kriyas HaTorah outside of Parshat Zachor, Parshat Parah, are Dirabanan, if you don't know if a word changes the significance, I would suggest not to correct the Baal Korah. Safek Dirabanan Lekula. So, if, for example, he said in the Torah reading, instead of, I don't know, Be Bayit, he said Ba Bayit, and you don't know if that's a mistake, I would not correct him publicly, because anytime you correct publicly, the Baal Korah will potentially get offended, and it's not worth it. Not worth it for a Dirabanan. Number two, if you know for a fact that he made a mistake, it says Lo Tirtzach or Lo Tignov, thou shalt not murder or steal, and he said Tignov or Tirtzach, then obviously a dead giveaway, you have to correct him. He said the wrong word. And therefore, that should be corrected even publicly. That's the halacha of the Ramah, the Mekel. So those are the two rules I have when I'm listening to Kriyas HaTorah myself. If I don't know, I don't correct. If I know for a fact, I do. Now, I happen to stand in shul very close to the bima. So many a times, I can whisper it so that not everyone has to hear, which I think is a good thing. Because if you're going to correct the Baal Korah, as I said, he gets nervous, he gets a bit offended, he can mess up the rest of the Kriyas HaTorah. All this is not worth it unless you know for sure. And number two, as much as possible, to do it quietly. Not always possible, but if it is possible, my suggestion would be to do it as quietly as possible for him to correct it. So that's with regard to mistakes of the Baal Korah. If the Torah is perfect, but the Baal Korah makes mistakes. So things like kesef, kasef are exactly the same word, doesn't change the significance. There's no reason to correct. Lo tignov versus tignov, for sure you have to correct. And if there's doubts, maybe someone who's a mumche in lashon in your shul should be the one standing near the bima, and he should be the designated person to correct on those odd things. Now, I would also suggest that if in your shul you have excited balabatim, namely, your congregants, together with you, are people that love to correct the Baal Korah. Like, they wait for him to make a mistake. But they're correcting him on things that don't have to be corrected. Then even more so, you should say to the Baal Korah, listen, in this shul, the only correction you have to worry about is the guy standing to your left. He's the one that you should worry about. And all these are good practices to make sure there's decorum. On the one hand, no one gets offended, and on the other hand, it's a proper Kriyas HaTorah. I will add, however, that I was very surprised this year, I'm still surprised, to hear a congregant, Shomer Shabbos, went to yeshiva, who said to me in shul, why do you correct the Baal Korah? So I said, listen, I only correct him when I know for sure, like I said here, and he did make a mistake, whatever it was, I can't recall. It was Parshat Ki Tavo, I just don't remember the mistake. So he said to me, Kvod HaBriyot. I said, but there's halachas in Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah said, even though Kvod HaBriyot, if there's a mistake that changes the significance of the word, you have to correct. And he said, no, if the guy's going to get embarrassed, that overrides everything. I said, according to what you're saying, you can rip out the whole Shulchan Aruch, all Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah. As long as the guy's going to get embarrassed, then forget about everything. Including, I said to him, giving a kid an aliyah or not giving a kid an aliyah. he's going to get embarrassed. So I don't agree with that one iota. On the other hand, I also don't agree with people that stand there in Kriyas HaTorah and like try to get the Baal Korah. So a balance has to be struck. If it changes the significance of the word, and you know it for sure, then and only then do you correct the Baal Korah. Now, without further ado, let's assume the Baal Korah is perfect, and the Sefer Torah is the problem. Namely, now the Jews are perfect, but Judaism, namely the Sefer Torah, is the problem. So I want to share with you, and I'll be happy to send again to anyone, the following, I would say, working paper. I call it a working paper, and you'll see why. This is a paper I put in my Talis bag, and it's very, very useful. And I'll explain why in a moment. I want to share it with you, and I'll explain why I think it's a great paper to have. I had it open, and now here it is. Okay. So as you could see, on the top of the page is what I call the basic letter. This is not the way it usually looks in the Torah. On the bottom of the page is the way it looks in the Torah. This is called Ktav Beit Yosef, which is most Ashkenazic Torahs today. On the left side, or on the bottom, is what's called Ktav Sfaradi. But on top is what I call a working paper. Namely, if you have a doubt, the Baal Korah says, whoops, this paper on top is the basic letter. Without the little getchkes on top, without the crowns, this is what an aleph looks like, a bet. As you can see here, the bet even looks like a kaf, but that's the basic letter because the kaf is more rounded. So I'm not even going to start explaining each and every letter. We can be here all night. The bottom line is, this is the paper I put in my Talis bag. If they ever call me up to the Torah to check, this is the paper I take with me, not embarrassed. I look at the letter in the Torah. I look at the letter on the paper. And that's when I say yay or nay. So I'm going to be happy to send this to everyone. I found this to be the most useful piece of paper that I have. I have books in my library behind me on Sifrei Torah. I always found them to be more confusing than helpful. This paper, again, I got from Rabbi Rafi Kadosh, is the one I use to this day. And Baruch Hashem, I've saved a few Sifrei Torah. And I'll be honest, I was involved in burying a Sefer Torah because of it too. So the bottom line is, happy to send this to anyone. I find this to be a very helpful piece of paper. And I just want to say again, the top is the basic letter. The bottom is how it usually looks when it's a little more fancy in the Sefer Torah. So, happy to send this to anyone. That's when the Baal Korah says, whoops, there's something wrong here. Okay. Now, if the Baal Korah calls you over and says there's something wrong, and you took out this paper, or the rabbi comes up and says, oh, no good, what do you do? So, I'm going to now say the following. If you are what we call a Sfaradi following the Shulchan Aruch, all you have to do is do the following. You roll up the Torah quietly, don't speak, tell everyone not to everyone, shh, the Baal Korah, the guy who got the Aliyah, no one speaks as a Gabbai. You could say, please be quiet, we're going to take out another Torah. You take out another Torah, and you continue laning. And that's the halacha, very simple. What is that based on? Because if the Torah's puzzle, if you already did 3-4 aliyahs, you're holding by Revi, how are you Yotze? So the answer is as follows. As you know, there was a great Jew named the Rambam. The Rambam had many jobs. He was a rabbi, he was a doctor. The Rambam wrote many books. The Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, which is his code of Jewish law, 14 books, and he also wrote Responsa. What's the difference between Responsa versus the Mishnah Torah? The Mishnah Torah, I like to say, is a code of Jewish law when everything works out. You get up in the morning, your teeth are white, you go to shul, you don't do any malacha before davening, you come home, you eat breakfast, you go to work. That's a perfect day. That's the Mishnah Torah. What's responsa? She'elot v'tshuvot or shut? That's when you have to get up in the morning so early that you can't daven, but you have to get to a flight. So what do? Do you say Birkos HaShachar or don't you? Do you wash your hands or don't you? When do you daven? Should you daven before Nates or after Nates? That's responsa. When reality doesn't meet the perfect world in the codes. So, the Rambam, being a rabbi at his time, wrote the Mishneh Torah, the code, and also wrote the responsa. And many a times, there's a machlokas between them. And this is one of those times. The same Rambam wrote in Mishneh Torah that the Sefer Torah has to be kosher, and if not, it's invalidated. You can't mekayim the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. If you only read the Mishneh Torah, you would say, okay, so I have my little paper. The Baal Korah called me over, or the rabbi came and said, Sefer Torah, no good. So at that moment, you have to read the whole Kriyas HaTorah from the beginning. But then you open up the Rambam in his responsum, in his shut. And in shut the Rambam says something extraordinary. He says that for Kriyas HaTorah, again, I'm saying all year long, except for Parshat Zachor, Parshat Parah, is the Rabbanan. And since it's the Rabbanan, you can even fulfill it with a non-kosher Torah. No more, no less. So how do we paskin? Like many things, we say like this, our Sifrei Torah should be kosher. But if you've already read from a Torah and it's not kosher, then we rely on the Rambam in the tshuva, in the responsum, for what we already read. And now, we'll fix it. Mikan v'lahaba. So therefore, the Sfardim who follow the Shulchan Aruch basically do this to a T. If and when the Sefer Torah is puzzle, they roll it up, put it back, take out another one, and continue reading. What they read until now is in accordance with the Rambam in the Tshuva. By the way, he's not alone. The Mordechai, the Ashkenazi, Talmud of the Maharam Mirutenberg, Chavrusa of the Rosh, he also says like this. And from Mikan V'lahaba, from here on forward, we'll read from a kosher Torah. That's what the Sfardim do. The Ashkenazim, much more complicated. Why do I say much more complicated? Because in general, they follow like the Sfardim. However, there's a little bit of a Yotze Min HaKlal that I'm about to present to you. Namely, they usually say exactly like the Sfardim just said, but with a little knetch, I would call it, with a little change. And that change is, if you can stop there and make another aliyah, or even make seven aliyahs. And I'll explain what I mean right now. So, if you look, not at this is a mistake. Let's take this out. Interesting, I just opened it. I'll do it in a minute. Okay. Not sure why this is still showing. Is Ezra still here?
I'm here.
Okay, Ezra, I opened up another document, but it seems to be showing the old document every time I press on it.
Did you click on later? It says like 01, there's arrows left and right, right above the banner.
Yes.
Okay, so open up the document.
I opened it up already.
Okay.
Okay, one second. I think I know the problem. I think I see the problem here. Let me try it now. Sorry to everyone for this little delay. Yes, good. Thank you, Ezra. Okay, so this is the complicated tavla, as I call it, for the Ashkenazim. Now, it's not so complicated. I will explain the governing principle, but it's like this. In general, what I just said is true. You're in the middle of an aliyah. There's a mistake. You invalidate the Torah. Put it away quietly. No one should talk. Bring out another Torah, continue the Aliyah with the kosher Torah. What you read already is accordance with the Rambam in the Tshuva. From now on, a kosher Torah until proven otherwise. In any case, that's in general. However, if indeed you're in a place in the Aliyah where you can stop. Now, where can you stop in the middle of an Aliyah? Or let's ask a different question. Where can you make a Hosafa? You can make a Hosafa if, for example, you're within three psukim to the end of the Aliyah, or you already read three psukim, whatever it might be, if you're able to stop, namely, you're able to, at that point, stop the Aliyah, then, according to the Ashkenazim, what should happen is the guy who got the Aliyah should make his second bracha, Asher Natananu Torah Emes, etc. Then you put away the Torah, and then you take out another Torah. That's what the Ashkenazim say to do if you're in a place where you can make a Hosafa, which means you already read, say, three psukim. There's still three psukim that you can read, and then you should stop. He ends his Aliyah, and for the new Sefer Torah, you proceed with the next Aliyah. The next Aliyah from wherever he stopped. But if that's impossible, you do like the Sfardim. Put away the Torah quietly, take out another Torah. So let's just look here. Number three on the list, I'm pointing to. La'achar shekaru la'oleh shlosha psukim al yoter. So let's say you're in Revi'i on Shabbos, and you started to read, and you already read three psukim, and in the fourth pasuk, there's a mistake. So, if it's in a place that you can stop, which means there's still three psukim left to the next parsha in the Torah, the next paragraph in the Torah. You know, in the Torah, it's not always like a ketubah, but rather there's paragraphs. Then you should end the Aliyah there. He should make his final bracha, and then start a new Aliyah with the new Torah. However, if that's not the case, then there's not three psukim left to the next paragraph, say, or you didn't read three psukim left, you do like the Sfardim. So then it becomes a bit complicated. Complicated even more if you get to Maftir. If you get to Maftir, and the Shavi'i already is in the middle of his Aliyah, as we said, he did his three psukim, whatever, and at that moment, you found the problem. Namely, before the Chatzi Kaddish, before you called up the Maftir, the problem was found. Then what happens is, according to the Ashkenazim, is as follows. First of all, don't call up a Maftir. The guy who got Shvi'i will read the Haftorah. Second of all, don't take out another Torah, because you already read seven Aliyahs. There's no reason to add a Maftir. Thirdly, you should do Hagba Glila quickly. Read the Haftorah, and then say Chatzi Kaddish. The reason is for what I said last week, that you can't have a hefsek between the guy who reads Maftir and the Haftorah. So in this case, since the Shvi is going to read Maftir, then you ultimately say Kaddish after his Haftorah, not before. So again, it becomes a bit more complicated. But again, that's only if it's in a place that you can stop. If you cannot stop there, then obviously it's a problem. But Shvi'i, by definition, is in a place where you can stop, because that's where you usually stop. So it's at the end of the Aliyah. So therefore, that's what you would do there. So Maftir is even more complicated. If you already called up the Maftir, and that's when you found the mistake, then bottom of the page, you don't take out another Sefer Torah. The Maftir finishes in the Pusel Sefer Torah, because his Aliyah is already quasi not a Chiyuv. So even less than a regular Dirabanan, Hag Baglila, and over to Maftir. So the bottom ironclad rule for Ashkenazim is we do like the Sfardim, unless we're in a place that we can stop. If we're in a place we can stop, then we should end the Aliyah there, and then take out a new Sefer Torah for the next Aliyah. Unless it's Maftir, then you just forego the Maftir. I don't know if many of you recall during COVID when, unfortunately, because of germs, we couldn't call up seven people to the Torah, and many a times the Baal Koreh got all the Aliyahs. There was no reason to call up a Maftir. So that's when the halacha kicked in, that the Shvi'i, again, after his Aliyah, Hag Baglila, right away Haftorah and Chatzi Kaddish after the Haftorah, not before the Haftorah. So ultimately, if I can sum up, Sfardim, or whoever wants to paskin like the Sfardim, if there's a mistake in the Sefer Torah, put it away quietly, take out a new Torah, and continue from the place you stopped. Simple. If you want to be a little more machmir, from the beginning of that pasuk. Okay. However, Ashkenazim say that if you can end the Aliyah, then let him end the Aliyah and take out the Sefer Torah for the next Aliyah with the exception of Maftir. So it's a bit complicated for Ashkenazim. I'll be honest with you. I know many a rabbi that said on this issue, because it's so complicated, we're going to paskin like the Sfardim. And indeed, I can understand them. It's not the only case we paskin like the Sfardim. There are other cases. I live in Israel. In Israel, even though the Ramah is still the posek of Ashkenazic Jewry, even in Israel, there are many issues that here in Israel, we don't paskin like the Ramah. We duchen every day in Israel, unlike what the Ramah says to do, to only duchen on Yontiv and only at Musaf. Everybody knows why, correct? The Ramah says that the reason is that you have to be besimcha to duchen. Questionable, but that's what he says. And people are only besimcha on Yom Tov, because then they don't think about work too much, and only at Musaf, because they're going to go home to eat in a few moments, at the end of davening. That's what the Ramah says. So they once asked Rav Avram Shapira, so how come in Israel they duchen every day? After all, we also work hard here. He says, no, you're wrong. In Israel, no one ever works, so therefore they're always happy. So that was Rav Avram Shapira's joke as to why we duchen every day. So that's one of the reasons, one of the examples we don't paskin like the Ramah in Israel. No one here, as far as I know, makes Kiddush Friday night in shul. No one here davens and doesn't say Morid Atal in the second bracha of Shmoneh Esrei. Many, many examples. Whoever's interested, I once gave a whole shiur on all the examples. And why? So, this can be one of those examples where we don't paskin like the Ramah. It's simpler. Put away the Torah quietly. Take out another. And you don't need this tavla. But if you want to paskin like the Ashkenazim, Ramah, Mishnah Berurah, this is the working tavla to do it. Namely, if there's a place you can stop, you should stop. Finish the Aliyah. If you can't stop, don't stop. Do like the Sfardim, with the exception of Maftir. That's basically what I would suggest in this regard. So that's with regard to what happens if the Sefer Torah has a mistake. So just to reiterate, A, Sefer Torah should be used and Baalei Koreh should not get too excited when they read. Two, only correct a Baal Koreh if you know for sure they made a mistake that changes the significance of the word. Number three, know what the letters should look like, basically, not with all the getchkes and all the decorations. And number four, last but not least, when there's a mistake, what to do. We paskin that whatever you read already is okay, even from Apostle Sefer Torah. Mikan va'elach, we go and take out a kosher Sefer Torah. So that's the basic rules of what to do if there's a mistake during laning, either by virtue of the Baal Koreh or by virtue of the Sefer Torah itself. Be'ezrat Hashem, I say that today, the Baruch Hashem found many ways to make the letters in the Sefer Torah much stronger so that it's more rare than it used to be to find a puzzle Sefer Torah. The older the Torahs are, I would say the probability goes up a bit. I'll just add that if you need to fix a Sefer Torah, you don't have to necessarily send it to a sofer if it's just one letter that's missing. What do I mean? If one letter is invalidated, it invalidates the Torah. But unlike, say, in a mezuzah, there's no din of kesidra, so you can just fix that letter. And you don't need to have a quill with ink. You can even fix it with a certain pen. Whoever would like, after the class, I'll send them a picture of this pen as it is in Israel. I believe they sell it outside of Israel. The halacha is the dio, the ink has to be kosher, and this pen, it is kosher. It's a very thin pen, and it's very, very easy to write with. I'll be honest with you, I am not a sofer. My penmanship, my teachers in elementary school all told me in the 80s, you'll get nowhere in life with your penmanship. That was the way teachers taught in the 80s. They felt they're going to encourage you by putting you down. So as you can all see, I got nowhere in life. My penmanship is still no good, but they didn't think that computers would be part of our life. So computers saved me in two ways. Number one, I can't spell in this spell check. And number two, my penmanship is no longer important. However, I've been in a place or two where I had to fix a Sefer Torah, and I'll tell you where. You're all gabayim? In Germany, the German Jewish Community Center, I forgot the name of it in German, organized the Gabayim Conference, which I admit was much harder than this conference because most of them didn't speak English and didn't speak Hebrew. So therefore, I had to have a translator, which meant everything took twice the time. So, lo and behold, I'm learning the Torah. It was Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. That was the conference. But Friday was Rosh Chodesh. So I got there Thursday night, and they did too. We just ate dinner and went to sleep. Friday morning, we had a nice minyan. All the Gabayim came on time because they're used to coming on time. It was very, very nice. And I took out the Torah, and there was a mistake. Now, this is a mistake with one Sefer Torah in the middle of Germany. It's not like I could take out another. So, it was in a place where you couldn't stop, actually. By miracle, I had this pen on me. And the mistake was such that I didn't need a sofer to really tell me what to do. So I fixed it. It was shlishi. We finished the aliyah. But I was nervous. So after davening, everyone went to breakfast. I called the sofer. So he said, Baruch Hashem today, put on your WhatsApp and put on the video. Let me see. So I showed it to him. He said, it looks fine. Just, you know, make it a little fancier over here. And thank God I was able to do it with my lousy penmanship. So if I can do it, I'm pretty sure you can do it. So the pen is this very thin pilot pen. I'll send it to you, whoever would like. So you should know that this pen is kosher to use to fix it for a Torah if and when there's a small mistake. If it's a big mistake, it's all over the place, then obviously it has to be properly checked. I'll just add that today there's a computer program that checks Sifrei Torah that's very, very good. I don't know all the details of it, but I understand that it doesn't find all the mistakes. So the sofer gets a report, and then he sees where he needs to fix, and then as he's fixing, he looks. He looks and sees if there's any other mistakes on that page, because if usually there's one, there's more than one. So that's the way Sifrei Torah are basically fixed. So I'll just end this part by saying, according to what we said, if lechatchila you should have a kosher Sefer Torah, then shouldn't you always check all the Sifrei Torah before using them? The halacha on this is very clear. Once the Sefer Torah is written and it was checked, then it has what's called a cheskas kashrus. It's considered kosher until proven otherwise. Just like your tefillin. Your tefillin never needs to be checked. Mezuzahs need to be checked twice in 7 years. That's a halacha. Why? Because mezuzahs are sometimes on the front of the house, which is outside. I live in an apartment building, but had I lived in a private home, my front door mezuzah would be outside. And therefore, if it's outside, it's subject to the rain, to the snow, and to everything else that happens. And therefore, there's a higher probability that would become pusul. But your tefillin or your Sifrei Torah have a cheskas kashrus until proven otherwise. That's number one. And number two, as I said, unlike the mezuzah and unlike the tefillin, even if it's pusul, according to the Rambam in the Tshuva, you can still use it for Kriyas HaTorah. So again, lechatchila, we don't do that. But b'di'eved, you could do that. So I was in Germany, Gabay conference. I said, wow, this is an educational moment, but you're not allowed to talk. So I quickly took out the pen, fixed it, went on, but afterwards I explained to everyone with the translation what happened. And ultimately, it could happen. And then we deal with it, but it's not the end of the world with Sifrei Torah, because as I said, according to the Rambam in the Tshuva, you can read from a pasul Sefer Torah. But if your tefillin, if your mezuzahs are not kosher, or your tefillin for that matter, not kosher is not kosher. And that's the way it is. Okay, so Ad Kan regarding Sifrei Torah. If there's any questions before we go on to the next small topic. Okay. You can write in the chat if you'd like or ask just verbally. Okay. Moving on. The next issue I want to deal with is not if you have a wonderful shul where the whole problem is that you want to give aliyahs to so many people and you only have a few aliyahs. But everyone's eligible for an aliyah. I want to speak about another issue. And that is what happens when you're in a shul where not everyone's eligible for an aliyah. What do I mean? First of all, I don't mean women. That's a whole nother kettle of fish. Not dealing with that this evening. I'm talking about a shul where, say, the bar mitzvah boy is Jewish, his mother is Jewish, but his father is not. And his father supports his son having a bar mitzvah. He maybe even pays tuition for him to go to a Jewish day school. And here he is at the bar mitzvah ceremony. What do you do for this father? You just say, you sit tight until we're finished? Or can you give him something in shul? So first of all, this is a very delicate question because you understand that everyone knows that this bar mitzvah boy's parents are intermarried. That's a political and a sociological question that a board of a shul together with the gabayim have to decide on. And I don't envy anyone that has to deal with that question. I dealt with it many times, either myself as a rabbi or through my students I placed around the world. It is not an easy question to deal with. But, suffice it to say, that's the first element. I'm already dealing with the bar mitzvah day. The father is in shul. He is not Jewish. He's sitting there. His son went through bar mitzvah lessons. His son's 100% Jewish because the mother is. Can you give the father any kibudim? So after dealing with the sociological, political issue, halachically, can you? So I'm going to tell you my opinion, but I want to preface it with a more makel opinion. There is an organization in Israel that has smicha for dayanim called Eretz Chemda. So we're talking about people that already have regular smicha and they're learning smicha to be a dayan. My smicha is yore be'isr v'heter, and their smicha is what's called yadin from the word dayan. Higher up. More testing. In this organization called Eretz Chemda with Big Talmidei Chachamim, they put out responsum that used to be based on faxes. Those that remember faxes know what I'm talking about. You send in a fax and you got back a tshuva in halacha with sources. I admit, I never learned there, but as a rabbi in Halifax, I sent in more than one question. One of them was printed in their 8, I believe now 9 volumes of responsum from rabbis around the world with the most fascinating questions. These are not normative questions. This is not what happens when you forget Yalla V'Yavo. These are cardinal questions. The question I asked, and I'm happy to share with you, was a wonderful member of the community got sick with cancer and with very bad back pains, and it looked like he had to use a wheelchair. And the question was, he's Shomer Shabbos, one of the only 4 in the community. Can he be a chazin, albeit sitting down in a wheelchair? He can't stand up. That was the question I asked. It was printed later in their responsum. Beautiful tshuva. So in one of their 9 volumes, if you look at my bookshelf here, the purple books behind me are the volumes. They have a tshuva about a bar mitzvah boy that's not Jewish. Not that his mother's Jewish. His mother's not Jewish. His father's Jewish. What can you give him in his bar mitzvah? And they allowed giving him haftorah. Giving him maftir, even by saying the brachas, and giving him the haftorah. I admit, ani akatan, very humbly, don't understand it. How can a non-Jew say the haftorah on my behalf? He's not obligated, not even on a basic level of chinuch, of a katan. So their logic is that he's a katan, like a katan, and therefore, just like an under bar mitzvah boy can read maftir, so too this non-Jew. I personally have to admit, I heard it. I didn't understand it. And I still don't understand it. So you should know what's out there. And it's absolutely legitimate opinion. I personally don't get it. However, what can you give him if you don't want to go with that? Obviously, anything that doesn't have to do with brachos. Hagba, according to the last daf in Megillah, is a very important part of Kriyas HaTorah. We all think it's Shlishi or Shishi. According to the Gemara, Hagolel, in this case it doesn't mean Glila, it means Hagba, Notel Schar Kulam, he's the most important person. So that, I don't think you can give him. But Galila, I believe, is okay, as long as the rabbi says it's okay. And obviously, Psicha, opening the ark. Now, there will be rabbis that will say that a non-Jew should not touch the Sefer Torah, should not go near the ark, and I understand it. But you should know that that, in my opinion, is more of a sociological, political stand than it is a halachic opinion. So it depends on your shul, depends where you are, but if need be, that's where I would draw the line. Opening the ark or doing Galila. I can't really think of other kibudim that I would give to non-Jews. Now, you may say, well, if the non-Jew knows how to read Hebrew, then give him Psukei Dezimra. Psukei Dezimra, you don't need a chazan for. I'm sure you all know that the Rambam and his Siddur at the end of Hilchos Tefillah says the chazan starts from Baruch Hu. There's no chazan for Psukei Dezimra, for Birkos HaShachar, for Korbanos. I would feel very uncomfortable that if we do have a chazan, it should be a non-Jew. But you should know that I personally have advised rabbis that if this is the case, and the father was so supportive, then you have to give him something, in my opinion. You can't just disregard him. After all, I'm just going to be honest, he didn't do anything wrong. If anything, the mother that got married to a non-Jew did something wrong. So I don't think you have to penalize the father. And therefore, I'd say opening the ark is, in my opinion, okay. Galila, a little too close for comfort for some. Haftorah, as I said, it's out there. I don't personally get it. So that's in terms of giving kibudim to non-Jews if needed in shul. By the way, I don't mean non-Jews in terms of bystanders that come to shul and want to see how Jews daven. They're bystanders. I'm talking about someone that's the father of the bar mitzvah boy. That's already a different situation than stam, a non-Jew that comes into shul and wants to see what Jews do in shul. I've dealt with many of them. There, I don't think you need to give them any aliyahs or any kibudim. But if it comes to the father of a bar mitzvah boy or a chassan or whatnot, then I think it's a little different. And the same thing would apply if, and I say if, there's a bar mitzvah boy or a chassan that is not Jewish. Maybe has a questionable conversion at best, or he is really not Jewish. His mother's not Jewish. His father's Jewish. His father's maybe even the president of the shul. And he wants his son to get an aliyah before his wedding. Say to a Jew. Which, again, he's not Jewish. He's getting married to a Jew. The whole thing shouldn't jive for us. But this may happen. Again, the rabbi has to decide yes or no. I know my opinion on it. But if it comes down to the halachic issue, what can we give him? I would say psicha is something that I feel comfortable with. Galila a little less, but okay. And that's where I draw the line. Someone did suggest to me, give him Anim Zmiros. Now, I'll tell you why I don't think that's a good plan. Because see, Anim Zmiros is either so holy that you only give it to a young child that never did an Aveira in his life. What do I mean? Young children, everybody knows, even if they do Aveiras, it's the fault of the parent, not the fault of the child. And therefore, at a bar mitzvah, even though we say it without Shem Hashem, we say Baruch Shepetaranu Me'on Shol Shelazeh. So therefore, we give it, because Anim Zmirot is so important, we give it to a young child to say. If it's so important, I don't think we should give it to a non-Jew, we should give it to a Jew. If it's not important at all, then I'm pretty sure the non-Jew knows that, and therefore it wouldn't help. So therefore, I'm not into the giving the Anim Zmirot. In general, I don't think non-Jews should lead services, even if it's part of davening that doesn't need a chazan. Like, as I said, Psukei Dezimra, Birkos HaShachar, whatever it might be. I was once in a shul where a dignitary came to shul, and the rabbi really wanted to give him something, so he gave him the prayer for the state that's said in English anyway. I thought that was okay, but I will share with you that I'll just share the joke, and you can take it and say, nice joke or bad joke. The joke is, when will the prayer for the state be a real prayer? When people start talking during the prayer for the state. So, you know, they give him the prayer for the state, thinking it's really not part of davening. I don't know if it's really important to daven l'shlomah shel malchut, and it's a real halacha, then it's important. If it's important, then it's as important as everything else, and we should be very careful who the chazan should be. But ad kan, regarding this issue, which I think is a very sensitive issue, and that is, when non-Jews come to shul, what can you give them, if anything, at all? So just to finish up this evening on this particular topic, I want to just bring a few things on the sides. Number one, what happens when you go ahead and you give an aliyah, and as the Baal aliyah comes up, the Baal Korah shows him the place, he kisses it with his talis, and it turns out he showed them the wrong place. What do you do? So in Shulchan Aruch, there are two deyot on this issue. One deyot says he has to make the bracha again. No good. He has to know where the aliyah begins. If he made a mistake, you have to make the bracha again. This can happen in a parsha where it's a lot of Vayomer Hashem and Moshe Leimor, and they all look alike. The other deyot says, as long as it's on the same column, even if you showed him the top of the page, but you're reading from the bottom of the page, it's probably okay. Short of that would be a problem. So that's with regard to if you show the guy who comes up the wrong place in the Torah. Number two, should the person look, open the Torah and close it, or leave it open when he gets an aliyah? These are two deyot on that same last daf in Megillah. That same last stop that says that Hagba is the most important thing, says there's two deyot. One is to open the Torah, say the bracha, and then read it. And the other deyot is, open the Torah, see the place, close it, say the bracha, and then open it again. So these are two legitimate minhagim, all the way back to the Gemara, as to how to get an aliyah. I don't think we have to paskin on this issue. The only thing we have to paskin on is, if a person leaves the Torah open during his aliyah, then he can't look in the Torah, because people will then think that the brachos are written in the Torah. So the Rama says to look to the left. For some reason, I've seen many people look to the right, or the Mishnah Berurah says, close your eyes and look straight, whatever they might be, but don't look in the Torah. So in many of your shuls, I'm pretty sure you have the brachos on the right side of the guy who gets the aliyah, and therefore, it wouldn't even be an issue if he's looking at the brachos on the right side. But if he knows the brachos by heart, and he's looking in the Torah, you have to tell him to look up, at least. Okay? Better to look to the left. Now, looking to the left is like acrobatics. You're holding the Torah this way, you're looking that way. That takes practice. But looking straight with your eyes closed and not looking in the Torah should suffice enough for that. I mentioned earlier, and I'm just going to mention again, if you have a shul with a lot of Kohanim or Leviyim, what could you do? What could you do? So you have seven aliyahs in Shabbos. This is the basic halacha, and then I'll say what the Rama says. The basic halacha is you start with Kohen, Levi, Yisrael. By Revi, you can give all the rest of the aliyahs to Kohanim and Leviyim. You already did Kohen, Levi, Yisrael. Finished. Many of you do that in Simchas Torah without batting an eyelash. Comes along the Rama and says, our minhag is not to give Kohanim anything but the first aliyah, and we only give Achron. Which means, if you want to follow that Rama, you have to give Kohen Levi Yisrael, Revi'i through Shvi'i to Yisraelim, and then start adding aliyahs where you give it to all the Kohanim who are the Balei Simcha. Could be very annoying for the shul. But if that is the minhag, that's the way to do it. So those are the two ways to do it. Halachically, once you do Kohen Levi Yisrael, you can call up all Kohanim, Levim, it's nice to say Afal Pishahu Kohen. Why do you say that? Because if you don't say Afal Pishahu Kohen, people may think he's a Pusel Kohen. So you say, Yamot Moshe ben Avraham Afal Pishahu Kohen. Meaning he's a good kosher Kohen, but I'm calling him up for Revi. That's a very nice thing to do. However, there are shuls that will only call them up for Achron or whatnot. Then you have to add a lot of aliyahs. You have to decide if it's worth it, because davening could be very, very long with all the added aliyahs. The same thing would apply, of course, to Leviim as well. But just with Leviim, I want to explain. There is no obligation to give a Levi the first aliyah. So if you don't have a Kohen, there's no obligation to call up a Levi. That's an open Gemara. That the minute you don't have Kohen Levi Yisrael, all bets are off. So you can call up a Levi for the first aliyah, or not. It depends on whatever you'd like to do. However, once again, if you call him up for the second or the third or the fourth aliyah, you should say maybe Afal Pishahu Levi. This way you're mekayim a little bit the minug of the Ashkenazim. Now I just want to relate to the two things that were written in the chat. Shalom Meir asks, can you not also cover the Torah? The answer is no. When you get an aliyah, the furthest you can go is to close the Torah. But if you cover the Torah, then after the aliyah, you have to do two things. Take the cover off and open the Torah. That's called over de over de over. Usually we make brachos over la'asiyatan, which means immediately after the bracha, we do the mitzvah. So we light the candles for Hanukkah coming up. The Shabbos with Shabbos Mevarchim. We make the bracha. We light the candles right away. We make the bracha on matzah and we eat it. So here, the Gemara, as I said earlier, does say, according to one daya, you could close the Torah and open it. That's called over. But to cover it would be over de over de over. And that's already too much. So you can't cover the Torah neither for the first brachos or for the last bracha. Only after the guy who got the aliyah said the second bracha, can you cover the Torah, and you should cover the Torah. That's actually a beautiful thing with Kvod HaTorah, but not during the brachos itself. Would you recommend to move the bracha to the left side? I wouldn't recommend it for the following reason. It would sometimes be covered by the Torah. Because the Baal Korah stands to the left of the guy getting the aliyah, I believe that many a times you'd have to move the Torah over and move it back. So I would leave it on the right side. And as I said, I cannot find a source for looking to the right, but I've seen many people do it. And in a book I have in my library called Davening with the Rav, Rabbi Golpin wrote a book about all the years he spent with Rav Soloveitchik in Boston and all the menhagim Rav Soloveitchik had on every issue. And in there he says the Baal Korah opens the Torah, sees the place, and looks to the right. He didn't say to the left, like the Rama. So I would leave it on the right. I would not move it to the left. I think too many times it's going to be covered by the Torah. Okay, this is a Atkan for this evening. I thank you all for listening. Be'ezrat Hashem, we meet one more time next week. I'm going to say two things again. Number one, any questions you have, either follow up or the sources I've shown, I sent it to everyone via email. It's on the page. But if you want it personally, please, I'm sending again my WhatsApp number here as well as my email. And I'll be very, very happy to send it to anyone that would like it. That's number one. And number two, I want to reiterate again that many of the things I said this evening are also based on minhag, not only based on what we call halacha. And therefore, you should definitely consult your local rabbi. But I think I gave you enough material to come to him with the material so he can make an informed decision what to do in your shul. Any questions before we adjourn? Thank you all for listening. Wishing everyone a very good week. Be'ezrat Hashem. We meet already next week in Chodesh Kislev, so a good Chodesh coming up. And Be'ezrat Hashem, looking forward to staying in touch. Larry, I got your note, and Be'ezrat Hashem, I'm sending it right now.
Thank you so much. Great class.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
My pleasure. Thank you all.
Meeting, please.
Okay, I'm just gonna, if you can leave it on a second, a few people sent me their email. I want to send them I want to send the sources to them, and then we can end the class. Just give me a half a minute, and I'll do that. The email's already ready, so it's no big deal. Let's see. Okay, and Shalom Meir, I have your email. I'm sending it to you in a minute. Thank you all. Have a good night or a good day wherever you might be.